Hello, my name is Robert Higgins.
And I'm Kate Tuxford.
And this is episode 51 of Screenwriting from the Trenches, a podcast about the craft and expression of screenwriting in all of its forms. From the perspective of writers just like you, this week we're doing another screenwriting therapy episode because life is a hellscape and talking about it keeps us from lighting things on fire. But before we get to our various gripes, we must, as always, discuss what is screenwriter / Twitter griping about this week. Take it away, Zach.
And it's just another day in screenwriting drama, screenwriting drama, screenwriting drama. It's just another day in screenwriting drama. It's another day in screenwriting drama.
Okay, and we're back. So first up, Kay Tuxford, somebody died this week. Can you tell us who?
Yeah, it surprisingly it's not Olivia Wilde's career yet. It is the Queen. The Queen died yesterday, as recording this on Friday. So she passed on. They reported her passing yesterday, the 8th, but obviously who knows how long. Maybe it's like Disneyland and, you know, she's been dead for a while, but, you know, didn't want anyone to know. So we don't know, but as of yesterday, it's official, folks. The Queen has passed away, and Twitter has taken this news by storm. Some of the British are sad and mourning and feel a great sense of loss and identity. Irish Twitter, Black Twitter, Indigenous Twitter has a very different humorous reaction to all of this.
Yes.
And I'm going to be honest, I really enjoyed those Twitters.
Yeah. somebody literally said tweeted this morning, if you got Black Twitter and Irish Twitter like in agreement on something, you fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, all right, I'm here for the text. You know, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I'm too ignorant to speak on, Queen Elizabeth. I don't know the things that she's done in her reign. But the fact is, like there are certain people, like when Mother Teresa died, I'm like, oh, shit. Mother Teresa, no. You know what I mean? Like, there are people that when they die, you're like, oh, man. Like, automatically, you know what they did. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, like, what they stood for. I'm like, what did this Queen Elizabeth ultimately stand for besides, like, an outdated system of monarchy that is basically nothing but a figurehead at this point? Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're a democracy.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of like, okay, cool. Somebody else is going to live in the palace, you know, like, oh, Prince Charles is he's a shithead. I mean, he's a shithead. He's a documented shithead.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. King Charles.
Wait, yeah, I guess somebody has to watch the corgis, man. Yeah, I mean, it's really hard, especially in a world. I watched The Crown.
Yeah, right. I'm more excited about what this might do for The Crown.
I know
the opportunities this might do for The Crown than I am about anything that's happening. You know,
I think you can look at something Elizabeth specifically aside. It's really hard to sit there and go, oh, you benefited from being a colonizer. You benefited from, I mean, the Irish, still remember the Irish potato famine, which wasn't just because of, they always like, oh, we were on like a blight happened on the potatoes, but it's actually the British bought all the potatoes and took all the supply. So, you know, the Irish remember that, obviously, because famine is not a,
and they hold grudges for a long fucking time.
Not a good thing. Exactly. And then always had a tumultuous history with, you know, being a part of or not a part of the UK. So, you know, I can't go through all those things as well because I'm just some semi-ignorant white lady in SoCal. But,
right.
You know, my thing is this is exactly what Twitter was made for. Shout your feelings into the void. You know, express how you feel about this. Elizabeth said it's not going to hurt her. So if you need to get something off your chest, now is the time. And by the way, I practice what I preach. When I die, you guys are welcome. Welcome to go into Twitter.
See, this actually made me think about that, because like you bring up a good point, because I was like, I want to be the kind of reaction that I would get from, like, you know, like if somebody came up was like, Jordan Peele died, I'd be like, oh fuck no, not Jordan Peele. Like, oh, we've lost a voice. You know what I mean? We've lost a voice in the darkness. Somebody who was speaking truth, you know, to power and things like that.
Yeah, and who is a working artist continuing to make a statement. Yeah.
Right, right. I want people to say that about me when I go, like, you know, rather than like, what did that person say? Oh, it was the potato. I remember that potato famine. Oh, okay. All right. Oh, yeah. Colonizing. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, just that kind of thing. But that's, you know, you're writing your legacy every day. But, you know, that is what it is. But speaking of people who are glad the queen is dead, because it takes the focus off of their own nonsense, the Olivia Wilde saga just blew up this week.
I forgot all about Spitgate.
Yeah, Spitgate. Fucking. Yeah.
Also, you know, just the looks on Chris Pine's face during the entire Venice Film Festival.
Yes, priceless. The memes of Chris Pine. Just
yeah. And there's also a bunch of video of Olivia trying and Harry Styles trying not to look at each other or stand next to each other.
Right, and then there was this weird take from feminist Twitter, that was like, if you're upset about Olivia Wilde, you know, her non-safe treatment of like her actors, you know, and getting away with murder, let me tell you about some male directors. And I was just like, ooh, I get that that's a hot take, but that's not necessarily like you want to put her in the abuser category with like Kubrick. Like, you know, it sounded like they were trying to
I mean, let's not throw, I mean, I don't think Olivia, based on Alanya's story I heard, I don't think she's sitting there like, let's do a rape scene 100 times.
No. Yeah. Like
Kubrick,
but like,
did, it was just, and then it was the first take. Kubrick, sorry, go on.
No. It was just weird, because it was just like, if you're like, let's not, like, I get that the situation is bad, but like, it was just a weird comparison to make. It was like one of these things where it's like, let's throw her in the category of all the other abusive male directors that we've ever heard of. And it's like, that's why.
Yeah, it seems unnecessary from what I know, it seems unnecessary.
Yeah, it was just weird. It was just like, if you think that she's the worst because like this, you should hear about these. I'm like, I hate those kind of takes. It's like, no, these are like, every person had like, you know what I mean?
It's a classic whataboutism. We experience that all the time in politics. As soon as we're like, Donald Trump, I mean, we're experiencing this with Donald Trump right now. Donald Trump has classified documents at Mar-a-Lago, and everyone goes, but what about?
What about Obama? Obama.
What about Clinton's emails? Emails, God. You know? And it's like, you can't, I mean, you can look at one thing and have an opinion on it, and you can look at another. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And like, what about
to mention the fact that there's also nuance and also you know, severity. Severity is definitely a thing. Like,
I mean, listen, the rumors around Don't Worry Darling have been, again, they don't, none of them make Olivia Wilde into a monster.
It seems
like potentially, you know, some choices that were made probably weren't necessarily the strongest of choices for, you know, for example, for Florence Pugh and things like that.
Well, yeah, it seemed like the two of them, like, seemed they had a disagreement over how to market the movie, or like how the, like, where it seemed like Olivia Wilde was, you know, sort of following the talking points of, you know, what's going to put asses in seats by talking about the sex scenes. Yeah. And Florence Pugh was just like, that's not what I want to focus on. Like, that's not, like, you know, But, you know, that's not what an actor would focus on, because it's not like you want people to go to the movies to see you naked or in like sexy scenes or whatever like that. You go to the movies to see a performance.
By the way, this is an experience people experience in Hollywood all the time that, again, don't make the monster category. But, you know, my empathy is out there that, you know, being on a very, I've been on sets where you have a bad set day and it takes the wind out of your sails. Like you just sit there going, oh my gosh, why do I do this? Why does this, you know, what have I done? You know, and so I can imagine it being psychologically just really unhealthy and unhelpful. But again, it doesn't make monsters out of anybody involved just for those reasons. And you don't have to lump them in, but you know, a poor Olivia, not
Yeah,
poor
with
Olivia.
like,
Olivia Wilde's fine. She's fine. You
yeah,
don't have to lump her
not
in
the
with like,
postman rings twice. Like, Jesus Christ, folks. Like,
yeah,
no.
exactly. So
Fucking A.
personally, I'm ready to put the Olivia Wilde drama
It
behind.
just feels bad, and the movie hasn't technically come out yet, but then like if it flops, it'll start all over again just because like misogyny Twitter will be like, ha, we did the thing. And it's, you know, and that's not what I want. Like it, there's
No.
a, because you know what I mean? You hate to see those guys win in any point. Like, a win for those guys is never a win for us.
And it's never
So,
a win for women either,
right.
because you know they're always like, "Ah, oh, we found a woman who sucks." And we're like, "Yes, women can suck." Like I, no one ever argued
Right.
that. You know, but I don't. I have, by the way, I said that I have no idea of the quality of the movie. I saw a trailer for it recently. I haven't really seen much about it, so I am not here to weigh in with any sort of film criticism on anybody in that project. I do, you know. I do want, in general, more female directors and filmmakers to step in with their visions. So, you know, if anything, just on a like a overall, I freaking hope it turns out and it was worth all the trouble and the stress because,
Yeah.
you know, we know some of our favorite movies we've ever seen also were chaos. You know, like Groundhog Day made Bill Murray miserable. Like it ended an entire friendship with Harold Ramis, and you know it's like one of the most beloved movies of our time. So suffering doesn't necessarily indicate art, but something good can still come out of suffering. So it'll be interesting to see how the movie plays.
Okay. This one was yours. I did not see this one, so
Yeah, so I sometimes cheat and I go on other platforms, but somebody on Twitter sent me this thread, so I felt it's still counted as Twitter, which is there has been a I'm not going to call him a whistleblower. I'm going to call him a little bit of a whistleblower who's a reader on Coverfly who's been making some posts on Coverfly, peeling back some of the stats and information about being a reader. And I thought it is a really good thing to take a look at because, what he was kind of he or she or they, we're gonna call him they because I have no idea the gender of this person and I don't
Right.
want, yeah, I was gonna say, and I think that's the most respectful way to go about it, is they are a Coverfly reader and they basically said that reading for Coverfly is a really flawed system. They've had, you know, they've been sitting down and kind of crunching the numbers, and you know, some of the numbers people should know. Is, you know, Coverfly usually charges, I think their basic notes package is $79.99, so $80. And the writer gets $45 of that amount.
Okay.
So that's just to kind of give you an idea that Coverfly is taking 40% of the fee. And then, you know, for the six notes package, Coverfly takes 60%. And what they're often pointing out is the time that it takes to actually read a script. They're really making oftentimes minimum wage, especially if the script is poorly written and it takes more time to read. And so this is just something kind of a word of the wise out there for reading and reading services is I think I don't know if you want to link this in your show notes, but
Yeah.
just to kind of get an idea, Coverfly happens to be the reading service that is being exposed right now, but this is a narrative I've heard time in and time out for many companies. And so I would just say, you know, especially if you're thinking about doing a script read. And then obviously one of the other things is that the readers, not only have they experienced exhaust because they're trying to read enough to be able to pay their bills, but a lot of the readers that are there are not necessarily, you know, they're not necessarily getting executives who have nothing to do but make $45, you know, sitting and reading for 8 hours. So, you know, you're not necessarily getting the highest people in the upper echelon. And so it's a worthwhile read for that, just to have that perspective, because sometimes I think, especially when we've been going through the contest run for AFF and things like that, you know, people often say, well, who is doing this reading? Why do they have a, you know, why do they get to have a judgment on my work? And, you know, why are they?
The answer is because they have bills to pay.
They have bills to pay. And, you know, I come from the reading community, and I was kind of, I know these numbers. These numbers are pretty much the statistics that have been for a lot of reading companies. When I, many years ago, for a company that doesn't exist anymore, so there's no trash talk really to have, you know, I worked as a reader at the Writer's Store. And when we were developing the program, oh my gosh, nearly a decade ago, we were paying people, you know, we insisted, because the Writer's Store, many of us were writers there, that scripts, like readers got paid bare minimum $99 a script 10 years ago. So, and that was like the hottest reader gig in town. So I'm not surprised by any of these numbers, but it is kind of sad that not only have they not improved, but they're the same numbers from other reading communities as it has been for a decade. So not impressed. But I wanted to throw that out there just to give some people some realization. Additionally, this is a weird double shout out, which is the reading program on Coverfly obviously costs $80, $140, or I'm sorry, $150 to do. But Coverfly has a peer-to-peer free program called Coverfly X, where you swap scripts with somebody on the site for free. I would really recommend folks who are looking just to get some general impressions and notes to participate in that. Save yourself a little bit of money there. Do some reading. You'll be better for it. And the notes you'll be getting in return, you won't be necessarily shelling out all that money for. So I don't know if we should link Coverfly in this particular one.
But yeah. For me, I'm like, you know, not to, you know, poo-poo that. I'm sure that's a very nice thing, but I feel like you could get the same experience by getting to know writers on Screenwriting Twitter and then doing that. Like, absolutely. I would recommend that. Like, you
absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely. And I've built a lot of relationships out of that, where you read other people's work and, you know, you have an invested interest because you want the person to do well, versus a lot of these things are sometimes anonymous. So you don't have an invested interest in the person. Some people call it bias, but I think there's a side to it as well, where, you know, if I know you, Rob, and I want to give you notes and I want your script to be successful, I'm on team Rob. It's going to reflect my notes. Not necessarily. Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's a good
team
point.
Team Rob. I'm about that. Let's all be on team Rob. We're all pantsers now.
No, sir. No way.
You see how I looked that in there? I just worked
note
it in
the board.
There.
Note the board.
Yeah. Anyway, here is at the end of our segment. I want to do something new. I wish we had a like a thing for it, but I don't. Like a bumper for it or something like that. But we're going to call this the social shout out, where we shout someone out by name just for being awesome or recognizing an achievement that they've done. So I want to start with two social shout outs. The first is Cindy Bagel, who I connected with this week, and we've been messaging back and forth, and she put me in touch with this writers group. So I have joined my first writers group in a few years. So
wow, congrats, Rob.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But Cindy took a look at my short, and rather than being horrified, as some people are, Some people definitely are. She really enjoyed it. And she was just like, you are not a moron. And I was like, thanks. I appreciate that. But seriously though, Cindy was really great. And so I wanted to shout her out because she's super cool. And she does a lot of stuff on Twitter for newbie writers and folks getting their feet wet in the industry. She has a mountain of experience and she's always giving out super cool advice on Twitter. She's
very generous with her time.
Yeah, we will be linking her in the show notes so that if you should give her a follow, you will definitely get something out of it. She deserves a follow. So that's the first. And the second is Melissa Hunter, who I've been a fan of for a very long time. I've been a fan of her since her Adult Wednesday series, Adult Wednesday Adams. I absolutely adored that series. And then it got pulled down because of copyright, which was, I thought was lame. You know what I mean? Because it was just like, you know, I don't know. It wasn't hurting anybody. I don't know if she was making any money off of it. Probably not because it was up on YouTube. But like, the thing was really funny and it was really great. It was just one of the most, like, you know, something based off an IP, and it was nice to see somebody like one of us like doing it. It was really, really funny. And I watched every episode. I was just like, I devoured that fucking thing when I saw it. And so I've been a fan of hers ever since. And she did an episode of She-Hulk this week, and it is absolutely hilarious. It is causing a firestorm on Twitter right now, where the nickname Wongers is now trending on Twitter. And that's from her episode. And she's created a new character called Madison. And it was a hell of an episode. And the one thing that I really liked about this is that you can see, based on like the things that I've watched and of Melissa's, you can hear her voice as a writer in her She-Hulk episode. And it's sort of a really great example of, even in the big leagues where you have these, like, you know, franchise properties, you can still, your voice can still shine through, like, in ways that, you know, that shows what kind of writer that you are. And so I wish this lady all the success that she can have. She deserves it. She's been working for a long time. So shout out to Melissa Hunter.
Yay, Melissa.
Moving on to our topic of the week, screenwriter therapy. This is where Kate Tuxford and I air our various grievances outside of screenwriting Twitter. We sort of do this so that we don't, you know, because everybody needs, everybody needs a little bit of therapy, and writing can serve as that certain, or weekly sessions. Everybody needs a, you know, therapy, you know, someone to talk to, and hopefully you can take some catharsis from us airing our various grievances. So I just wanted to do another one of these because it's been a little bit since we've done one.
Yeah.
Kate Tuxford, and shit's getting real.
Yeah,
you went through some shit. You went through some real shit. Like, I don't know how much you really want to talk about it.
We can talk about quite a few. I mean, I don't like,
like, you lost the movie. You lost the movie, like, a little bit.
My movie got put on hold, is the appropriate term.
Yeah.
Which is just a fucking bummer.
Yeah.
People ask, I've been very honest about it. You know, people ask me about it. I'm not like, I'm not pretending. I'm being honest. And it's a real bummer because, it's so many things were working and going in, in the right direction, that a right. few things going in the wrong direction really just, you know,
yeah.
worked against everything we're working on. And, you know, one of the things I think is the hardest thing about it is when it comes to down to everybody who's a part of the project or like, oh, I can be there. Especially sometimes even, I'm going to just say, it's always slow on the financial side. I'm sure there's somebody who's like, no, it's not slow for me. But I'm going to say, in general, mm-hmm. that's the slowest part for a lot of films to build up that momentum. And a lot of folks, especially right now in the climate, suddenly went from being, yeah, that's great, let's support anything, to catch me next time.
Right. And also, you're also doing this, you know, especially in indie film, you're doing that weird catch 22 of like, hey, this is a thing that I'm doing. And they're just, you know, they're like, you know, you're doing it at the same time you're trying to get the money. So you're trying to like, you can't even rob Peter to pay Paul. It's like you're trying to do them at the same time. And yeah, so you're like doing this weird dance where you're like, trying to tap dance to make sure that everything works. Like,
yeah. And I think the other thing that really comes down to it that is that indie film is, so I was, you know what, it was really bumming me out just because that we realized we had to put this on hold. I don't know, it's probably like 4 or 5 weeks ago it was official. And it was really bumming me out. But then what I did this week, or what I've been doing the last couple of weeks, is I've been listening to the Audible of Like Brothers, the Duplass Brothers autobiography.
Yeah, and I have that one myself. I really enjoyed it.
And
that.
You know, it was kind of the chicken soup panacea that I needed. because they ran into the same frustrations that I ran into as an indie filmmaker, which is, you know, you can either work on your own and nobody will tell you no because you only work for yourself,
right.
But as soon as you start bringing in other folks and other expectations, suddenly then, you know, you find yourself spread very thin in indie world, you mm-hmm. know. And see, this is therapy, but I don't think this is all negative, because I think too often we get locked up in all the things that you need to have, that
right.
many people make successful short films picking up a camera and making a film with their friends. You know,
right,
and they end up making a interesting, exciting story. I don't know how many times I've been at a film festival and they said, well, you know, we had a question one day and these were the people who were there that day and we had this, that, and the other, and we filmed it, and you know, we were really pleased with what we got, so we, you know, we finished it up, put it into post, you know, and here we are today.
Like, the most famous example of which is, of course, like you were talking about earlier, is This Is John.
This Is John was made for $3 on an yep. old video camera. And I show that to my students at Chapman quite a lot when we do a short film class. It's nice because there's a story behind that, which I think is good for writer therapy as well, which is a lot of people don't know. They didn't just like sit around going like, let's make a film. They were depressed. They were having their own screenwriting therapy mm-hmm. session, which is they thought that they had done everything right, the Duplass brothers, Mark and Jay, and I'm paraphrasing. Their book is excellent, so you should listen to it. If you listen to it on Audible, they'll read it to you, which I always enjoy.
Yeah, because you're like, oh wow, Mark and Jay actually read the whole thing. That's great.
And this, yeah, these are their words they wrote, then reading to me. It feels very pure.
Yeah, it's like a big podcast. It's really great.
It's like a big podcast. Exactly. We love podcasts. What they mentioned is that they spent a long time building up their resources to make a feature film.
Right.
And they put together
a $60,000 movie.
$60,000 first feature film. They studied filmmaking. They studied what life should be like on set. They studied all the right resources to have. They shot the film. It's called Vincent Del Rio.
Mm-hmm. It's about a marathon runner.
A marathon runner, or a champion runner, played by Mark Duplass. And they did everything right by the book, you know, and made their days and cut their scenes. And it's never seen the light of day because it sucks. It's never seen the light of day.
Never seen the light of day. No.
No.
And that makes me feel better about my first movie, because I was like, it will never see the light of day. And I was like, well, you know, the Duplass brothers did it too. I don't feel so bad.
And so they were sitting on the couch out $60,000.
Right.
You know, that's, you know, a couple, that's like a year or two.
That's at a big deal, man. Like,
it's, you know, a big deal. And it was $60,000, what, 20 years ago, too. So it's even more. It was even more.
that's like $100,000 in today's dollars.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And so they had scrimped and saved from their editing business to make the movie and make their splash. And they were depressed and they were feeling like they were never going to make something. And then they decided to pull out their parents' old video camera with the burnt out pixel in the center and make movies like they used to, which was just like pick up some ideas, film with the camera, do it right there, just amongst the two of them.
Right.
And they made This Is John. And This Is John is a perfect example of let's just pick up and try to tell a story. And I think many of us filmmakers would benefit from taking some of that inspiration and saying, I can make a story right here that's interesting. You know, I can do it with my friends. I can do it with myself. I've seen many people who will make a movie on their own. You know, they'll be like, I set the camera up, I performed in it, and then I edited it. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot of fun always, although I'm sure many podcasts and YouTubers will be like, that sounds like my day. But you can do that. You can make things. And I think so too many times we put these like, oh, well, you need this many people on set. You need this sort of budget. You need, you know, you need this, you need that. Yes, especially if you get to a big project and money's at stake. You definitely need those things.
At a certain budget, I feel like, you know, the union is there, of course, to protect from exploitation. Mm-hmm. But there is no exploitation when there's no money. At that point, everyone is being exploited. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you're not like... It's not like there's one person on top, unless you're dealing with some sort of trust fund baby, whatever like that. But like, you know, for the rest of us who are not trust fund babies, it's not like I'm making millions of dollars, you know, with this film and stuff like that. I'm just trying to get it done, man. And if something happens, I'll take care of you. But it's like, this is not the Fast and the Furious 7, dude. Like this is a $1,000 indie feature. You know what I mean? Nobody's making a ton of cash off of this. No one is making a ton of cash. Like,
right. But it would get made and it does get done.
Right.
So, and that's sometimes I think where the trade-off is. Because a lot of new filmmakers are like, oh, I've got a really great script. It's going to cost $100 million to make. Nobody knows who I am. Right.
Right.
Nobody knows who I am. I have no credit
so
to my name.
Much, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and
this is gonna cost $20 million. You're like, who the fuck are you, dude? Like, God,
$20 million. Nobody makes $20 million unless you're Olivia Wilde anymore.
You saw what happened to her, motherfucker.
And you saw what happened to her,
right?
Yeah.
And this is the thing.
By the way, I'm sorry. Harry Styles, this movie felt like a movie. Was just chef's kiss this week. Did you see that soundbite?
No.
I'm gonna send you a link. I don't actually hold a grudge against him for saying that. I imagine after like a million press junkets and being exhausted, you would say
The other thing. Olivia Wilde pissed off of screenwriting Twitter this week. She actually went and pissed on our side of the fence. That was the other thing. I don't know if you saw this.
I did not, but I don't try to watch Olivia Wilde piss.
Yeah, she basically, because she spoke wrong about the script for Don't Worry Darling, because the original script was written and then she found it, I guess, on the blacklist. It was on the blacklist. Mm-hmm. And somebody brought it to her, or she found it or whatever like that. And she was like, this is good, but I want to bring in someone else to write it. But then she said, the way she talked about it, she was like, I found this original IP, and people were like, no, like this was written by someone. This is not IP. Like
it's a
script written by someone. And so they were basically saying that she was denigrating the original writers of the script, of the original draft that she got, because she was like, well, you know, I liked it, but I wanted to bring somebody else on. And then, you know, the two of them took a crack at the script and they were like, this is not IP. Like, you get, you know, these other folks brought you their words. You decided that the words needed changing to fit what your vision of the movie was, and that's fine, that happens, but you don't just get to just write it off as like, oh, original IP, like, come and be like, no, you need to, like, the original writers brought their idea, right? They should get credit. So that set screenwriting Twitter into a frenzy. That was like, I was wondering when she was going to cross over into our territory.
I did come across that. I was very confused because original IP, an IP is not a, I mean, it is something you then take the IP and adapt it into a script, but
right.
If the original IP is a script, there's nothing to adapt. Usually people say that, like, oh, I found a comic book.
Or a book or, you know, or a poem book or something. Or
short story. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a very similar thing.
Even
thing.
A play, you know, which is basically a script in itself, is still like IP.
It could still be an IP and take some adaptation. And it's the same exact behavior she had for Booksmart, where again, it makes it sound like she found some like scrappy script just unloved in the industry instead of on the annual blacklist, which is the best unproduced screenplays of the year voted by the industry. So most of these, I mean, I'm not going to say all of these scripts work for everybody, but most of these scripts are well regarded and considered like, yeah, this will make a good film by many people in the industry. So for her to be like, oh, I found this unloved kind of IP and then had my people come and zhuzh it up. You're like, okay, you know, all right, like, man, okay. that's the equivalent of being like, you know, a 5-star Michelin chef and saying, oh, I found this other chef's dish at their 5-star restaurant and I fixed it. Like, okay. It's a matter of taste. Yeah. It's a matter of taste. And I think also potentially it's going the way of I have no basis on this. I'm just putting this out here before I sound like I'm accusing everybody. But I think there's a huge habit and tradition when a script like this gets picked up as a spec that somebody wants to put their fingerprints on it so it feels like theirs and it feels like their vision, either because, you know, like we had with The Quiet Place where like Krasinski wanted to shape it, I think, in his vision and also wanted to kind of say like from the mind of Krasinski, you know, even though the original draft and his draft is not different too much in terms of story.
And that's so weird to me because it's like, you're going to get the credit, especially the director. You like when it's the director, you know, you're going to get the credit anyway. You know what I mean? It's film. Like, you're going to get the credit. It's not TV where somebody's like, who's the showrunner? Who's the creator of the show? You know what I mean? Like, the Duffer Brothers are going to get the credit for Stranger Things because they're the showrunners of Stranger Things. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's their baby. But, you know, Krasinski was going to get the credit anyway. He's the fucking lead actor of the film. His wife is the lead actress. And he's directing. Of course he's going to get the fucking credit. Like, you know what I mean? But, like, let Beckham Woods have, like, whatever. Like, it was a weird little thing, stuff like that. And I always wonder if they didn't come back for the sequel. They said they were busy. But I always wonder if they didn't come back because they were just like, that just rubbed them the wrong way. Where it was just
Also, Paramount didn't pay them.
Right.
I mean, why would you go back to a place that doesn't? I mean, this is an open secret, one of those notorious open secrets. Basically, they were told they were going to get a bunch of back-end points, and Paramount did classic back-end points and said, oh, there was no profit.
So yeah.
Nothing. What are you going to do?
Ed Solomon does that thing every year where he holds up the thing where he says, like, apparently, like, the creative accounting that Sony does every year where they send him things and say, this is why we can't give you any money for Men in Black.
It's the same deal. Like,
two sequels later, three sequels later,
and a cartoon.
Like, come the fuck on, fuck you. Like, oh, come on, man, that's bull. Anyway,
same deal. Go on.
Speaking of fuckeries, you know, the other thing that we talked about last week, it was a resource of the week, but you know, the micro-budget Twitter has really gone off, and mobile Twitter really went off at the fact that Filmic Pro is going to
be subscriber-based.
They're going to a subscription system, and mobile Twitter, mobile filmmaking Twitter, and micro-budget Twitter are not having it. They are not having it, and like Filmic Pro has had a really bad week. And not to pile on, but like, I'm pretty sure that Filmic Pro ate a recent short of mine, and that you know, this is, you know, screenwriter therapy, that was really devastating. I speaking of like, you know, getting the, you know, a couple of friends together and doing a thing, you know, that was, I was doing this short where we were trying to do basically the best version of that, where, you know, like everybody came out, you know, we made sure that the actors got a little bit of something, you know, everybody got food, you know, it was just two actors, a phone, a gimbal, and some Bluetooth microphones. You know, we basically set up to be the smallest like thing possible. So like anybody could basically do this. We didn't use any moment lenses. We just set it up so that, you know, this was all supposed to be a part of, you know, our new series of how to make a movie for $1,000, which I think we're rebranding to the challenge series, but that's neither here nor there. But like, you know, we were shooting this short and later on, I was going through the footage as I was editing, and I had transferred the footage because Filmic Pro has this thing now where you can wirelessly upload to Dropbox. And so we have you know, a Dropbox for the channel and for our film stuff. So we up, you know, so you get redundant footage on a server. So we uploaded it and then put it on the computer. And then when the time I got to editing, I was looking at it and I'm looking, and not only am I missing clips that I know that I shot, clips that were longer were cut in half.
Oh.
And I don't know why that is. I can't figure it out. I don't understand why. And first I thought it was Dropbox. I first thought that Dropbox had cut them in half because we didn't have a constant Wi-Fi connection because I was doing it from my phone. And I ended up going out and running errands after we did the short and stuff like that. And as we were uploading, I just had it upload for like over 24 hours. So I thought it was just Dropbox eating the clips. But then we went and we shot something last week or the week before last. And we shot about four takes of something, like a really long take. The first two came out fine. And then the last one literally got cut in half. So this is literally a Filmic Pro thing. Because I checked the original clip and what ended up on Dropbox. And because the last time I couldn't check the original clips because I'd already deleted them because they were on my phone. But like, so I don't understand. So whoa, that was devastating because I lost most of a short, just gone. And there was no way to get it back because we had problems with the location. And so there was just no reshooting. There's no going back to get it. And so we tried to put together a version of the short, which was missing like half the dialogue from it, where we had the very beginning of the short and the very end of the short, and then trying to marry the two of those without any of the middle connecting tissue was disheartening, Kate Tuxford. I'm not going to lie.
I'm so sorry, Rob.
So
I'm so sorry. There's nothing worse than seeing, like, I've experienced this as writing where I'm like, oh, that's a really great scene, and then it's just poop, it's gone. And
it's gone.
And you know you can recreate it, but that magic that was once there.
Right. It's just not there. And so it's I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Was it over a certain minute limit?
See, I'm wondering about that. I think it's about file size. It may be FAT32 again. You know, FAT32 is an issue where if you get above a certain file size, basically the phone's processors, no matter how good they are, they can't handle them. So they switch to another file, and they create a new file. Now with the phone's being so focused on video now, all of them being so focused on video now, they're trying to get around that. And like certain, you know, it was a thing for a while. I remember we used to have it on like early Canon cameras, like the T2i used to have it. It was a 12 minute limit. You used to be able, it would like, your camera would record up to 12 minutes and then you had to stop and then start recording again, like, because it wouldn't switch over. Now, eventually when they got to the C100, they, you know, sort of got around the 12 minute limit and they would just start a new clip. And most cameras nowadays, they don't even have it at all. Like if you use something like the Blackmagic Pocket Cinema camera, you can record forever on like a solid state drive and not have a problem. They just don't care. But like, you know, it, like I, and I've tried to say this before, like that's why, that's one of the reasons why, you know, as much as we love mobile filmmaking and it can set you free, you have to know that there are certain limitations because your phone is not a camera. It is a phone. It is not an actual camera.
It's well, not- I'm gonna argue that even actual cameras have this problem, not right. this specific one, but I've been on sets where, you know, the footage didn't record, or right. the scene, you know, the file corrupted. Or
the file corruption like is a big deal, especially with red cameras.
Yes, yeah. exactly. And so, like, I've been on sets where we lost an entire, like, half a day.
Yeah, you know, and that's very true. But you know, like. The FAT32 thing is a problem that the phone is getting over, but occasionally I think it still pops up because of the thing about it, the dirty little secret about Filmic Pro is that it is actually hacking your iPhone. It's a hack.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
literally an act that is a hack, and so it is hacking your phone so that you can get like a certain thing. It's basically the app version of like when folks used to. Crack it when they used to crack iPhones in order to get like you know access to like controls that Apple would not let you have inside of the apps and stuff like that. The Filmic Pro is basically just a hacked version of that, so you can get like log ProRes 4K footage from out of your phone because you can't get it in the normal camera app. And I don't know why Apple just like we got Filmic Pro, we're not going to do it. Fuck it, if you really want to do it. Just go to Filmic Pro, you know what I mean? Like that sort of thing. But it's really weird how they won't give you those controls. Like other phones have now started to heap on the fact that Apple won't let you do it. So now they're like Sony is jumping on that. Yeah. I know Red tried to create a phone that was basically for just completely that, but the phone didn't do well. But like other like Android models are now trying to like jump on that because they know that Apple won't. Because they're relying very heavily on Filmic Pro. So they're just like, oh no, here's our pro version of the phones, you know, will give you the pro features, app pro access to our cameras inside of the actual camera app. You know, so you don't have to hack your phone with an app, which is just, it's hilarious to me. But like, the fuckery of Filmic Pro, you know, now I'm like, I almost feel like I have to find a new app because I'm like, I can't deal with this. I can't afford to have like my footage not be there. This is $1,000 movie. Like I can't, you know what I mean? There's not a lot of breathing room here for me to fuck up or to have a fuck up like that to for something like I'm just going to lose an entire day's worth. No, it can't. I can't. Yeah. Because that I just don't have. I like, you know what I mean? It's time and money that I can't, it's precious, you know, it's out of pocket. I can't get it back. You know, any sort of thing where I have to redo a whole day, you know what I mean? Like this, you know, short. Luckily, like I said, it was just something that I was putting together to show, hey, if you've got a few friends and an iPhone and a gimbal, you know, like here's a setup so that, you know, anyone can do it regardless of stature. You don't need a moment lens. You don't need, you know, expensive equipment. You don't need here, you know, even a sound person. We found a $40 solution so that you can just do this even as a one man band. Like that was the whole point where we set up a completely wireless scenario. Where even if you were just one person doing a short, you could do all of the things and get professional or at least professional sounding and professional looking footage, depending on what phone you had and what, you know, what your personal setup was. But here's something that you can base off of, like a one man band potential situation. You can do all of that. And we were trying to set it up and then it all came crashing down. I'm just like losing that shit. And let me tell you something, like putting those disparate pieces together, especially when some of them look really good. Now that's the thing, the footage that came out of like this log, like being able to shoot log ProRes footage, it's absolutely gorgeous. Like yeah. We finally reached the point where you like, you can shoot something and people be like, oh man, what'd you shoot this on? And be like, I shot it on the phone. And they're like, whoa, really? I had no idea you shot this on phone. Like you could do it now. Like I know a lot of the, you know, the folks and stuff like that, but like I was looking at one shot that we have. It was a moving shot of like our lead actress like running into the cafe where we were shooting, and you can see the clouds behind her, and the definition of the clouds was just ungodly. I was just like, I have never seen that kind of definition in like phone footage. It was insane. And so I was like, we finally got to that point, but you know, then of course you have these other issues. And it was just, it was disheartening. And it was mostly, it was really disheartening to realize that there was nothing that I could do about it. There's no reshooting, there's no going back. It just, we just have to live with it. And so anyway, that was,
Rob, that was, I'm so sorry.
That was fun for everyone. So, and I really, that's the other thing. I really like that short too, because it was the same short that we actually read on this podcast.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah. We, where we went through and we did the live reading and you guys gave me notes and I took them to heart and I rewrote the script. You know, Michael de Blasio was there, was our guest for that episode. And he was, shout out to Michael de Blasio for doing that. And, you know, I took those notes to heart and I rewrote the script and I thought it was much better, than what I had originally, written. And, you know, some of those notes ended up on the actual script that it was based off of, the longer script. And, you know, I was really looking forward to like, not only to doing it, but also coming back on this thing and be like, here's what, you know, what we did and then the notes and then giving it out and be like, I took those notes and then made it better, you know, and doing that kind of stuff. But I can't because it is gone. So, yeah, whatever.
Well, it does happen. Yeah, I was going to say, it is really hard to see something you worked on not have a full life.
Yeah.
So I am very sorry, Rob.
Yeah, but you know, that's what this that's what screenwriting therapy is for. You know, you just talking it out. I hope you guys are out there. You guys are just like, oh, me too, man. Me fucking too.
And I was gonna say, I think the reason why you need therapy every once in a while, screenwriter therapy or filmmaker therapy, is because you care. You care about the movies right. that you make. You care about the process. You love doing this, you know. And so if you, I try not to, in the world of Twitter, be a bit too glum. Not that there's anything wrong with being glum, but, you know, I try to, for the most part, go like, oh, what's a mostly helpful thing? Recently, I did put on a very sad thread about missing somebody. So, you know, I'm not exempt from it, but yeah. Especially in the filmmaking, it could be very easy to post every day, like, why does everything suck sometimes? and people would go, I feel you. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I try to, first for my own mental health, try to look at the bright side in a lot of these things. But I think it's important to mourn when you lose something like this. And I think it's important to like recognize that, like, yeah, it was maybe a smaller project to you, but it was, you know, something you worked on and right. something you're excited about. You know, I'm gearing up to do a short later this month. And, you know, it gives me anxiety knowing that everything could be lost, no matter, you know, how excited and ready and everything and prepared you were.
Yeah.
There is still, you know, the hands of fate still could be, you know, not in your favor. So, you know, it is something we face out there. I think this is the walk away lesson is, it sounds like since this was happening in camera, this is always the benefit of replaying and checking.
Yeah, shit. If you're out there shooting in Filmic yeah. Pro, folks, make sure that that's the thing that you need to do. If you're out there shooting in things like that, I don't know what is going on with the current version of it, but check to make sure that the length of your clips matches like what you shot. You're gonna, you know what I mean? Like try and keep a count of that and make sure you do that before you upload it to Dropbox, just so you can, and before you like leave your location really, because yeah. if you're missing something, you know, and you don't find out till later when you're like, you know, uploading it and stuff like that, and you can't get that location again, then that's it. That's what you got. So make sure if you're using Filmic Pro to shoot out there on your phones, make sure that your clips are right. And I think the X factor is may not be just FAT32, but also using Filmic Remote. If you're outputting to another, we were doing it to my iPad. If you're using something else as a monitor, that may be the X factor. So check that. We're going to be doing some tests to see whether or not that was what fucked everything up or whether or not it was FAT32. We're going to try and sort of harness that once and for all. But, you know, just be careful out there, folks. It's devastating to lose it, and I don't want that to happen to any of you out there. So there you go.
Let's feel better on.
A little bit, yeah, actually. You know, let's move on to what are we watching, consuming, writing. Why don't you start, Kate Tuxford?
Well, I just finished the Duplass Brothers book, Like Brothers. So that was my big driving around, listening, reading, feeling a little bit better about how things are going. I also, let's see what else. I started watching Rings of Power, but I'm not very far into it yet. So
what? How can you watch something with Black Hobbits? It's not source material, okay?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. I somehow I survived. And it's okay. By the way, like, I'm so confused because D&D is based on a lot of Tolkien, mm-hmm. and elves come in many colors in D&D. So I was like, I don't even understand, you know, all this sort of stuff. So I don't get it, except for people just want to be angry.
There have been Tolkien scholars who have come out against this. They're just like, you know, the Rings of Power is on the wrong side of Tolkien because he clearly wanted this to be an all-white enterprise. And you're just like that's you're really gonna stand? That's the hill that you want to die on, man. Like that's the hill that you want to die on. Like I don't.
He's wrong.
Like, right. I don't understand this take, this really weird take where it's just like
it doesn't really matter what Tolkien wanted. It'd be like if we made a Harry Potter movie and included a trans character in it now, we'd be like, yeah, that's what we want with
right.
this property.
But you know, not just even that, although it does make sense because it's like, you know, the studio was literally saying like, you know, this is not the type of thing that people want. This is not the type of thing like it's dumb for us to do it that way. But like beyond that, but it's just like it's so weird that someone is just like, no, this was upsets me because it's not all white. Like that is such a weird take. And they're like, it's not racism. It's not racism. You're like, isn't it though? Like I don't know I don't get the mental gymnastics.
And it is weird.
It's so weird. That's like
because you watch something like a Marvel project, and maybe I don't know the comic books, but you watch something like Thor, and you're on Asgard, which I guess is supposed to be Viking, and there are people of color there.
Right.
You know, Idris Elba's there. You know, being a badass, and you're like, okay, so like the Vikings have no problem, you know, with their gods being people of color. Like it's fine, and nobody sat there in the Marvel movie going, I don't know, that seems pretty north for those folks, you know, like nobody did that. Nobody said I'm thrown out of it, you know, because there are people of color and Viking gods on another planet. So like, right. Chill the fuck out. Which was an old movie I found on Tubi called Mystery Team, which is the young.
Oh, I love that fucking
it's
movie.
It's on Tubi right now.
Oh
and it
my
is
God.
Silly and ridiculous.
Vintage Donald Glover, man.
Vintage Donald Glover. So we watched Mystery Team.
Oh my God, that movie's so good. Oh, dude, did you fuck this bread? so good.
Oh, man, the Gentleman's Club is the one that gets us.
Oh my God.
Time. Like I want him to. Can I pay? I can pay you to watch. I'll pay you.
Should we get 8 balls? It's infinitely quotable. It's so good. It's so good. That is a cult classic right there, Kate.
Yeah. So Tubi is free. If you want to see something, just wonderful and stupid. I highly recommend Mystery Team.
Yeah, go to get Mystery Team. That's
not Mystery Men, which is also fun, but different movie. Mystery Team. Yes. So that's what I did. What did you do, Rob?
Well, I've been consuming Dan Mirvish's book on Audible. I was also listening to Stephen King's Cell, which is the first Stephen King book that I ever read. It was it was one of the first books that I like read as an adult, where like I picked it up, read it, put it down, and was like, no, I gotta read that again. And like immediately picked it back up and started. I love this. I don't understand why someone doesn't make a Netflix series out of this. This is a perfect IP for Netflix or something. It's like the best parts of Walking Dead without it being The Walking Dead. It's amazing. It's just like this weird piece of IP that they made this shitty version of it with Cusack and Samuel L. Jackson, where they tried to shove it into like a shitty, like below $5 million movie, which is weird because the first scene of the book is literally the city of Boston descending into chaos. Like, okay, let's do that for $5 million. That's going to work. You know what I mean? It's so dumb. And just anyway, but I'm reading that, and I'm reading Dan Mirvish's book.
That's my next one, by the way. We're both reading the Mirvish. Yeah.
I'm doing the weekly watches of She-Hulk, and I finished Harley Quinn. I'm still very like Harley-y. I'm very much there for those characters. And I can't wait for season 4. And then I restarted Strange New Worlds because I didn't finish the whole season. I was sort of like parsing it out because it's super great. And I just love every episode. It's so quaint. It's such a nice, it's like a warm hug. You know, it's like one of those things where you're just like, you know, but it's also a little dark sometimes. Like there's some darkness in there sometimes. And you're just like, okay. It's just, it'll get real dark. Then you're
like, I like it. Yeah.
You're like, a little spicy. But yeah, I think that might be my favorite show of like the whole year. Just like, you know, Strange New Worlds is so good.
It makes me excited to see it. And I think it's made me realize how much I miss interesting episodic format. Episodic never left. If you look at like network TV and you look at procedurals, they're still there. But
for streaming, it's mostly like, you know, sort of in that sort of thing. I think, serialized, you know, yeah, it's very serialized. If you sort of look at Deep Space Nine, which was like the early version of like that sort of thing, it was like that. And I feel like the X-Files sort of nailed that, the balance of what I think of what most streaming services should do, of like a mix of like X of the Week kind of things. And then also like, you know, the sort of franchise episodes where you're the storyline episodes where you're just sort of, you know, right on there in the storyline of what's like the deeper storyline of what's going on. I feel like those were like the examples. There are other examples, obviously Breaking Bad. And I know how much you enjoy being, you know, you want people to be a Vince Gilligan in a universe of Damon Lindelof. Anyway, but yeah, so.
You're just making sure that that's just like on my tombstone by the end. You're like, let's type it in there.
In the world of Damon Lindelof, be a Vince Gilligan, Kay Tuxford.
Yes. Sorry, Damon, but you're going to cry and all your money. You'll be fine. Also, you know, feel free to give me some of that money.
Yes.
We have indie films to make.
Speaking of resources, this week's resource, you know, life is pain, so sometimes you need to laugh. I wish I could link you guys to the Adult Wednesday series. You can still find, some people have bootlegged it on the internet. But what I can link you to is a hilarious short that Melissa Hunter did. I believe that she wrote wrote it. I don't think she directed it, but she wrote it and she stars in it. It's called Dead Puppies. And it's up on YouTube for you to laugh at and enjoy. And I highly recommend you guys doing that. And that is our show. Screenwriting from the Trenches can currently be found on Anchor, Apple, Google, and Spotify podcasts, as well as KevinLMartin.com. Our screenwriter Twitter drama theme song was written by Zach Morrison and is used with his permission. And hey, since we're a new podcast, we'd appreciate it if you dropped us a like or rated us 5 stars on whatever platform you patronize, because
algorithms.
For questions for us that we can and will answer on the show, email me at rob@respectablemofo.com. You can also find us on Twitter. I'm at @respectablemofo.
I'm at @k_tux.
And Zach is at ZachMorrison18. And these things, as well as my YouTube channel, where our digital series, How to Make a Movie for $1,000, which will soon be rebranded as the Challenge Series, all will be linked in the show notes. Thanks so much for listening. We hope that you will continue to do so.
Now, stop procrastinating. Those pages aren't going to write themselves.
Okay, I feel better. Do you feel better?
I'm glad you feel better. I feel okay. I feel all right. I feel like maybe I'm not ready to watch something called Dead Puppies, but I'm getting there.